Dear Santa Claus, I am not sure what I want for Christmas this year. Sometimes it is very hard to decide. Perhaps you should send me your catalog.
No, no, I want an official red undercover knife. Should you want to get ready by the laser rifle?
You'll shoot your eye out, kid. Merry Christmas.
Ho, ho, ho.
Man, 3 weeks today, people. Waking up, hopefully you get that gift you've always wanted and treasured from Santa.
You know what that means? In a couple of weeks, I got to start my Christmas shopping.
You know, this might be a quick sign. I just got to share this really quick. It's cold this morning, right? If you're thinking of a lottery ticket, you know, giving it to somebody, this might be the time to buy. The current temperatures are the most winning numbers in the state lotto. 33, that's Seattle right now. 32, Everett. 27, Spokane. 31, Tacoma. 38, Anacortes. If you look at all the history of lotto, maybe it's a sign, John.
That's a numerology I was not expecting this morning.
The exclusive you get from A Commute with Carlson.
Oh, welcome to the radio program, A Record, the John Carlson Show. Yes, fourth day of December, Thanksgiving, so late that the traditional complaints about, everybody got Christmas decorations up too early. Actually, Christmas season is a little shorter than usual, about a week shorter than it usually is, because of the late Thanksgiving. So get into the spirit if you're not already. Man, I've been happy since Election Day. Christmas came early for me. Even when the news is bad, it's good. Even when the news is bad, it turns out to be good. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about here. Donald Trump wants to root out the woke culture that has infested the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, and is partly responsible for every branch of the military missing its recruitment targets. That basically they're more worried about being woke and appealing to non-traditional people to join the military, and they've forgotten their core audience, who have been increasingly turned off by it all. So he names Pete Hegseth, decorated veteran and author of a book on how woke ideology, how woke culture was ruining the military and hurting military recruitment. The book was called The War on Our Warriors, came out last summer. He names him defense secretary. And then there was accusation that he sexually mistreated a woman back in 2015 who was one of the people who was hosting him at a appearance he was making several years ago. That turned out to be groundless. That turned out to be like one of those accusations lobbed at Brett Kavanaugh, completely without substance. Just a lot of drama. But there have been other stories about alcohol abuse and financial mismanagement and ongoing mistreatment, several marriages, et cetera, et cetera. So you've got half a dozen senators, including the very pro-military, Joni Ernst, Republican of Iowa, who are not committing to supporting Hegseth's nomination. Basically, what they're saying is, hey, you're going to have to earn this one. So there is some concern that Pete Hegseth's nomination is taking on water. Okay, now that's the bad news, because Pete Hegseth has all the right beliefs and he has the right agenda, and he understands the importance of making wokeness a priority, getting rid of the woke culture in the Pentagon. So what's the good news? You know who they're talking to about replacing him?
No, I have not heard any
other. Governor Ron DeSantis. Hello.
Yeah.
who waged war on wokeness to the point where he even took on Disney?
Yeah. The question then becomes, is Ron DeSantis more valuable remaining as the Florida governor or in the cabinet with Trump?
Well, I don't know if Ron DeSantis is looking at a future in politics. He's been governor for 6 years, and he's been, I believe, the nation's finest governor. There's like three or four outstanding governors, and he's always on that list.
Eminently qualified to be president. He's got his own military service.
Former congressman, 6-year governor, himself a veteran. And not only that, he's not only hand in glove where Pete Hegseth is when it comes to taking on wokeness, he's done it. He doesn't just talk about it. He's done it. And so if Ron DeSantis is looking at a future in national politics, being a superb governor and then combining that with being cabinet secretary, I mean, a senior cabinet secretary, Department of Defense.
One of the major ones there.
That's a big one. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a huge step toward a great political future for Ron DeSantis in national politics. So the Wall Street Journal now reporting that Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump have talked about him becoming Trump's Secretary of Defense if Pete Hegseth's nomination for the job does not go through. So now we're hearing Ed O'Keefe from CBS saying the same thing. So there is no doubt that that Ron DeSantis has the right beliefs. He's got the right background. He was a former member of Congress before he became governor. But in addition to that, he also has a reputation for just being a superb administrator. And you see that all the time when there is, you know, these on-again, off-again, on-again, on-again hurricanes that always hit the Sunshine State, that always hit Florida. He's got a great reputation for running the state of Florida. And that matters. I mean, look at Jay Inslee's reputation for running Washington. It's terrible. We have a dysfunctional state government. So Jay's not only got the wrong agenda and the wrong beliefs, he's incompetent. He's inept at governing. But when it comes to Ron DeSantis, he's probably the nation's finest administrator. He's, you know, one of the best. So anyway, if you hadn't heard the news, if Pete Hegseth ends up not becoming the next defense secretary, the job could very well go to Ron DeSantis. That's a pretty big step up. That's a big step up. And by the way, don't think I have forgotten that this is the Wednesday edition of the John Carlson Show, and you know what happens every Wednesday, folks. It is time for Legendary Lyrics, the almost world-famous contest where I read you the lyric of a classic hit song. And then when you hear us play that lyric going in or out of commercial break, you be caller number 10. At 206-421-5757, and we have some nice prizes coming your way.
Yeah, just what a treat here to share with your loved ones here during the holidays here or anytime during the year. Daniel's Broiler, Seattle's favorite since 1980. Boy, they go after the choice. USDA Prime Steak when it comes to seafood as well. Only the finest high-end spirits. 4 locations, Bellevue, downtown Seattle, Leschi, South Lake Union. Here's what I like, John, Phil, everybody. I'm very shy. I hate calling restaurants. Yes, the Christophers would like to make a reservation. I can't do it. I have my daughters do it. You can now do that online at the website at Daniel's Broiler. And real quick, for any kind of an event, maybe a reception, wedding reception, maybe you want to do a final screening of Yellowstone, do the private dining with TV, huh? The Cascade Room, Prime 21 Lounge, Prime 809 Lounge, The Loft, Rick House Whiskey Bar. You know they're serious when they name the private dining rooms, John. These rooms are incredible. I know you've experienced that as well.
Well, the best, in my opinion, I've been to all the Daniels.
Yeah.
But the one I like best is the one in Bellevue because you're 21 floors, you know, above everybody else, yeah. And the views are spectacular, especially around the holidays.
They're always unique. Danielsbroiler.com.
All right. So here is your lyric for today. We're snuggled up together like two birds of a feather would be. Now, by the way, this actually temporarily stumped both Philip J. Vandervoort III and radio legend Mark Christopher, and that's not easy to do. But do you spot this lyric? Can you name it? The song? We're snuggled up together like two birds of a feather would be. When you hear us play it, be caller number 10. Once again, 206-421-5757. And some treats coming your way. I'll give you one hint and one hit only.
Careful.
This has been a hit song several times. That's your hint.
A decorated history of hit songs.
Well, hit like what?
It's been a hit in several artists.
Okay. That good of a song.
Several artists have recorded this song, but the version that you're going to hear has been a hit several times. People really like it. So there you go. That's what I can tell you for now. All right, we have a lot happening on the commute with Carlson this morning. For one thing, Joe Biden complained that Hunter Biden was treated differently. Was Hunter Biden treated differently? The answer is yeah, and not in a way that Joe Biden would want to admit in public. This being the festive season, the Christmas season, we've got to have our friends from the Salvation Army in to talk to us, because not only is this Friday Toy Drive Day for the Salvation Army, but how would you like to be a Salvation Army bell ringer? You have that opportunity, and we're going to tell you how you can capitalize on it, take advantage of it. You, your entire family, or you know, a group of your friends can go out and ring the bells at the Red Kettle for the Salvation Army. We'll tell you how that happens. Also, Kash Patel. Yeah, he's getting criticized too, but nothing in terms of scandal. I mean, the closest Kash Patel has been named by Donald Trump to head the FBI. The opponents of Kash Patel include the media and the far left, because Kash Patel did something unforgivable. As a staff member in Congress, it is Kash Patel who did the work the media weren't doing in exposing the Russia hoax, Trump collusion hoax, the Steele dossier and who paid for it, and the fact that it was an absolute work of fiction. Yeah, that was done by Kash Patel, a lead investigator on the House committee that was looking into the matter. And then he went on to appointed positions in the Trump administration toward the end of his tenure, his first term. They hate this guy because he exposed them. He showed what they were doing in terms of the FBI completely abusing its role, and then exposed what the media weren't doing, namely reporting all this. All this stuff that came to light didn't come because of an enterprising Woodward and Bernstein-type reporter saying, hey, you know, this huge scandal about Trump being involved with the Russians, yeah, that's all hokum. It's not true. And we don't mean marginally untrue. We mean it's a hoax. It didn't happen. this Steele dossier paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign, midwifed by an attorney with a law firm that has Seattle ties, the Perkins Coie law firm. The attorney was Mark Elias, an arch partisan. That dossier is fiction. Not exaggerated, not hyperbole. It's fiction. That's the guy Trump wants to clean up the FBI. You know what? Perfect. Because the FBI, at the field office level, at the local level, the FBI continues to be a superb crime-fighting organization. The problem with the FBI is at the top. The problem with the FBI is in Washington, D.C. That's where the FBI has had its reputation tarnished.
The circuits that cannot be cut are cut automatically in response to a terrorist incident. You ask for miracles, Theo. I give you the FBI.
And that movie didn't help him either, but... John
McClane. Hans.
Anyway. So we'll get into that as well. It's a busy morning. Again, usually we glide into the holiday season and we ramp down the news. No. This is a historic year, and there's a lot of history happening right in front of us right now. A lot of local stuff as well we'll get into as the Commute with Carlson continues. Talk Radio 570, KVI, Philip J. Vandenberg III, right around the corner with the social media sweep. Good morning. All right. Welcome back, The Commute with Carlson. That is the Eartha Kitt version of Santa Baby.
That was like 17 years before she ever got the role in Batman as Catwoman.
Yes.
She was young.
Yeah. Of course, later on, remade by a more sassy version by Madonna sometime in the 80s. Anyway, yeah. Philip J. Vandenberg III, what is happening in the social media world this fourth day of December?
I've got a whole lot of serious stuff, but I've got a couple of humorous things. And so we're going to start off with the humorous things. We're going to do something light here in the 6 o'clock hour. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Most of you know about the news reports the last couple of days. President Biden is in Angola. And he's meeting with the president of Angola. But, you know, true to Joe Biden form, it didn't go particularly well when he was speaking there alongside the president in Angola.
Oh, no.
So here we go, President Biden.
You know, with you in Angola, a vibrant city, the city I know is not Angola, but in Angola, in a vibrant city.
Oh, my Lord. Vibrant. Kind yeah. When I think
stumbled
of Angola,
out of the blocks there.
When I think of Angola, that's what I think. Vibrant. Man, oh man.
And then somebody on social media who's, I guess, some sort of a podcaster, but takes the time to put together AI recorded versions of famous people. And he's done several with Donald Trump. And he has done another one with Donald Trump. So this is artificial intelligence, Donald Trump. So this is basically a doctored recording done with the output of artificial intelligence. And we're going to call this AI Donald Trump, the Canada edition. Here it is. Here's what was posted on this guy's social media handle.
People of Canada, the Great White North, as they call it, except it's not so great anymore, is it? I call it the Great Sad North because that's what it is, sad. On January 20th, I will be slapping huge tariffs on all products coming from your country. The economic consequences will be devastating, but they don't have to be. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was just with me at Mar-a-Lago, and I suggested that I would make Canada the 51st state. It's called Manifest Destiny, and it's happening whether you hosers like it or not. You should have never let us get Alaska. That was your first mistake. makes no sense that you have to drive through Canada to get to America. Not any longer. There are a lot of great benefits to joining America. We have a great military, the greatest in the world. Quebec will no longer be a thing. You don't like it, you can all move to France. All Tim Hortons will now become Dunkin' Donuts. Curling will be banned. It's a ridiculous sport, if you can even call it that. As for your precious ice hockey, this will be the hardest part to deal with. But who said there wouldn't be growing pains? The American and Canadian national teams will merge. Say goodbye to your silly little leaf. Say hello to stars and stripes and bald eagles. Also, for all those celebrities that moved to Canada because I once sucks to be you.
Gosh, that's scary what you can do with AI voicing.
I don't know how much input.
That was not Trump, everybody. That was artificial.
Exactly. That was just AI. That was not actual Donald Trump. So based on what we know about how this AI input stuff works, you kind of ask for the Donald Trump voice, but how many zingers does this guy put in? And whoever's kind of crafting the script, some pretty good one-liners in there that are pretty true to Donald Trump, things he might actually say. So that's why I wanted to play that one. That one had me cracking up when I found that one overnight.
Like Robert De Niro's Al Capone said in The Untouchables, we laugh because it is funny and we laugh because it is true.
Sucks
and
to
by
be
the
you.
Way, it's also fake, okay?
Right.
That was AI. It was not Donald Trump.
A good way to get back at all those celebs that wanted to go to Canada. All right. TheHill.com, we can return to serious politics here. TheHill.com had a profile of, you know, who could be a future Democratic Party standard bearer now that Kamala Harris basically is pretty much done leading the Democratic Party after her presidential election loss. Where do the Democrats go? Obviously, it's not going to be Joe Biden either. And they have a couple of rising Democratic populist leaders. But I don't know if this is going to help them in 2028. The people they list, John Fetterman, senator from Pennsylvania. Senator from Connecticut, Chris Murphy. Representative from New York, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Representative from California, Ro Khanna. Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear. And then the UAW President, Sean Fain. And so those are the ones that they kind of list. All of them would have a couple of drawbacks to deal with. And then the columnist ends up adding, the Democrats need to find their own version of Joe Rogan, a Joe Rogan podcaster of the left. So
I know just the guy.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan. He used to be.
He used to be more.
He used to be. He was a Bernie Sanders supporter at one point.
Yeah, right.
Joe Rogan, he was absolutely repulsed by the reality of their rhetoric. Once he saw the reality of their rhetoric, he said, oh, take me out of here.
Yeah. So based on this list from thehill.com, I would submit that for Democrats, the search still goes on.
Oh, there's Burl Ives, former resident of Anacortes, Washington. See, he lived out his final years with us here. It is 6:31. When we come back, the New York trial, a lot of people with their eyes on this one, a trial that shouldn't even be happening. Daniel Penny, who heroically wrestled someone threatening to kill people on a subway to the ground and held him prone, that man died, and Alvin Bragg charged Daniel Penny with murder. How is that trial going? We've got an update for you right ahead. 24 minutes to 7 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show. The New York City district attorney named Alvin Bragg is notorious for downgrading violent crime charges against repeat violent offenders to misdemeanor status or even dismissing charges. For people who are accused of misdemeanor crimes like shoplifting and the like, his office is once again notorious, well known for simply dismissing the charges outright. The only time he wants to crack down is if your name is Donald Trump, where he tried Trump on a ridiculous 34 count allegation, which is going to be reversed if it even ever again sees the light of day. It's been set aside for now because Donald Trump is president. But again, it should be dismissed outright. And if you do something like Daniel Penny did. Daniel Penny was on a subway with a bunch of other people. He is a young man in his 20s, a veteran. When this guy gets on the subway and starts scaring the you-know-what out of people who are commuting, threatening them, the guy doing it, Jordan Neely, is a drug addict, and when he began to get volatile, Daniel Penny, a former Marine, put him in a chokehold to stop him from flailing about and threatening other people. There's absolutely no doubt that Jordan Neely posed a threat. There's absolutely no doubt the people on that train, and we're talking about a very diverse group of people. It's a New York subway. We're feeling threatened by this guy. And when the authorities came, the assumption is that Neely was unconscious. And Daniel Penny goes to the police station, completely cooperates with them, explaining why he held the guy back, and then was asking what kind of charges that Neely would be facing. Then he was informed that Neely had died and that Daniel Penny was being now investigated for murdering him. It's absurd. It's not even clear if Jordan Neely died from the chokehold that he was placed in. But the bottom line is that this guy should be celebrated as a hero, and instead, a jury holds the future, his future and his fate in their hands. They received the case yesterday afternoon, and they continue deliberating. This is a very interesting contrast with what happened when there was a terror attack on a French train back in 2015. And a young serviceman from Oregon happened to be on the train with a couple of Army National Guard buddies. His name is Alex Scarlatos. And these three Americans rushed forward to stop this terrorist and became heroes. In fact, a movie was made, Clint Eastwood movie was made about what happened on that French train 9 years ago. He has weighed in on the Daniel Penny trial yesterday on Fox News.
I think it's getting a lot of attention across the country just because it's something that I think everyone could kind of see themselves in, at least anyone in a blue state. I know a lot of people are, I wouldn't say that's affecting how people act in public, but I think if you live in, you know, Oregon, Washington, California, New York, you are kind of concerned that something like this could happen to you, especially if you're someone who thinks of themselves as someone who would step up. I mean, in our terrorist attack, for instance, you know, I mean, it happened in a gun-free continent. I wasn't able to carry. We had to fight this guy by hand. And I intentionally left out the part where I tried to shoot him in the back of his head with his own handgun because I didn't know how French law would treat that, if they would still be considered self-defense or not. And come to find out, French self-defense law is more generous than the state of New York.
Should it be more generous than the state of New York? Again, we are talking about someone who is not only protecting himself, he was protecting the other passengers on the subway. Racial politics definitely playing a role here. Daniel Penny happens to be white. Jordan Neely happened to be black. But it is absurd to suggest that it was his race rather than his actions, his behavior, that prompted Daniel Penny intervening to, again, protect other people on the subway from him. Here's more from Alex Garlatos.
Sounded like this guy was that much of a problem that the entire subway car knew who he was, and a lot of them said they felt frightened. I mean, it just seems like common sense. I mean, obviously, no one deserves to die because they're having a mental health episode, but at the same time, no one should have to put up with, you know, a drug-addicted schizophrenic person threatening their lives. And, you know, thank goodness someone like Daniel Penny stepped up. I mean, I don't think that this isn't something that should be controversial. There's a lot more issues that we should be talking about. It just seems ridiculous that the state of New York can do something this out of the blue and it, you know, generate the kind of news when, you know, Hunter Biden is being pardoned today as well. There's all sorts of double standards when it comes to how blue states and Democrat leadership enforces the law.
And Scarlatos also expressing some dismay about if Tim Penny is convicted.
You want people to step up and try to do the right thing or not. I mean, if he, God forbid, is convicted, it's going to frighten a lot of people in blue states into inaction. I'm, again, not saying that that's what happened on our terrorist attack, but a lot of people did not do anything, whether because of fear or God knows what, but they just kind of sat back and let us fight this terrorist, and we're just kind of too petrified to move. And I think a lot of people in blue states are going to be too petrified, not because they feel like they're going to die, but because they feel like if they do anything, they're going to be prosecuted for it. Now, that's I think, is something that's why the entire country is watching this case, is because
exactly. By the way, Alex Garlatos just got elected to the legislature in Oregon. Boy, let's hope he has a good political future in front of him. But bottom line is, this guy, Jordan Neely, had a long criminal background, long criminal history. There was no doubt he was having some sort of an episode, and whether it was induced by drugs or mental health or they were both contributing factors, it's irrelevant to the fact that he was posing an immediate threat to people, and Tim Penny stepped forward as a good Samaritan to protect other people. And, you know, he didn't wail on the guy, didn't beat him up. He held him down prone and forced him, put him in a chokehold to force him to give up. And when he stopped thrashing about, then Daniel Penny relaxed the chokehold. Now, his defense attorneys have presented pretty good evidence that it was the combination of drugs and a previous health problem that Jordan Neely had that caused his death. But even if it had, even if the chokehold did cause his death, it was an inadvertent consequence of someone trying to protect other people from this assailant. He never should have been charged. The only time Alvin Bragg wants to get tough is when he can make a racial angle out of something. Well, the right kind of racial angle. And go after mainstream, everyday, ordinary New Yorkers who are simply trying to play by the rules. Those are the ones he likes to go after, not the career criminals. So let us hope that this jury comes back with a sweeping vindication, acquittal on both the ridiculous charges that he's facing, second-degree manslaughter, reckless homicide, and criminally negligent homicide. He was not criminally negligent. And if he is convicted, Skarlatos has it exactly right. This is going to be a threat to everyone, a warning. Don't you step in and try and stop crazy or criminal people from hurting someone else. Because if you do, we're just waiting to go after you. This is what police officers now face all the time, that the far left just looking for an opportunity to go after a cop. And this is, it's time for common sense to prevail, and I am hoping that there's a lot of common sense on this New York jury. We will see. They just started taking the case yesterday. They'll likely have a verdict today. It is 48 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. Going to check in with our good buddy Lars Larson right around the corner, our noon to 3 host, as the Commute with Carlson continues. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Back we are. It is 7 to 7, 6:53, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. My buddy Lars Larson joining us. Good morning, Lars.
Wasn't it nice to see one of the craziest federal courts, the Ninth Circus, actually slap Dow Constantine upside the head with a legal or judicial 2x4?
When they not only reversed his decision, they slammed it, and they slammed him. For our listeners, Dow Constantine had told the federal government, federal immigration authorities, that they could no longer use Boeing Field to fly.
Oh, no, it's King County International Airport.
Well, that's what it is, but it's Boeing Field.
And, I know, but
and it's
just
founded,
such a
by
joke.
The way, founded on federal land.
Yep.
So the feds gave the county the land for King County International Airport, Boeing Field. And Dow Constantine said you can no longer fly illegal immigrants being sent back home even when they have been ordered out of the country by an immigration judge.
They've already gone through the whole process, had all the rights. And believe it or not, this ought to offend people. Illegal aliens have constitutional rights if they're on American soil. And so we've afforded them all those things. Many of us think that shouldn't be happening, but it's in the Constitution still. So you give them all the rights, all the appeals, everything else. You've spent a ton of money, and you've already walked them through the process. They're done. And Dow Constantine says you can't use the airport.
And then the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the most reversed and the most liberal Court of Appeals in the country, slams him down big time. And says,
not a surprise, because remember during Obama when Arizona tried to enforce immigration laws, say, Obama, if you're not going to do it, we'll do it. And they got dragged into court, and they were told in no uncertain terms, states and local governments have absolutely no right to enforce federal immigration law, positively or negatively.
That's right. Exactly. All right. I love it. Lars Larson, you'll love him every day of the work week, noon to 3. The talk radio program, a regular The John Carlson Show, continues hour number 2 straight ahead. At 3 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning, The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, this third day of December, right where you need to be. Thanks very much for joining me. Oh, my goodness, we have so much happening today, because this is unlike almost every other year. Usually when you hit December, the news slows down a little bit. But, boy, not here. just the opposite going on. And, of course, we don't forget that every Wednesday it's legendary lyric time, where I read you the lyric from a classic hit song. And when we play that song, going in or out of commercial break, as we will sometime this hour, you stand to win our prizes that we've put together, including this week a $50 gift card from Daniel's Broiler.
Yeah, just a favorite here. And John, with all the contests I've done over the years here, to have somebody who just continues to be a part of this. They've loved this contest since the beginning, and they just keep going here. Generosity of Daniel's Broiler. You can use the gift card. They've been around since 1980. Any four of the locations, they all have their distinct reason as to where they place these restaurants. Bellevue, downtown Seattle, Leschi, South Lake Union. Get online for reservations, dine-in, takeout, delivery. I told everybody last hour, I love the fact I don't have to call a restaurant. I don't know why I'm so shy in doing that, but just to get online saying, Daniel's Christopher Family for four, I need the Leschi location. Very handy. Take a look at the menu, danielsbroiler.com. The other thing, you win the gift card when you get to Daniel's and use it. Tell them, we got this from the Carlson Show, the Commute with Carlson. Just bonuses, you know, even more fun with Daniel's Broiler. So keep that in mind.
All right. You've got 5 minutes after seven. Here is the lyric to this song. And the only hint I'm giving is that it has been a hit song several times over the years with different artists. So here is your lyric. We're snuggled up together like two birds of a feather would be. We're snuggled up together like two birds of a feather would be. When you hear that lyric going in or coming back from commercial break, just call 206-421-5757. It's 206-421-5757. You're caller number 10. Boom, you are the winner. All right. Who is our winner of most hysterical cable news commentator of the week? Even though it's only Wednesday, oh, we know our winner.
Huh. We're going to stop the voting early, huh?
It's CNN's Lee McGowan, a liberal author, writer, advocate. She was on a panel at CNN discussing Joe Biden's pardon of his son, which she says is completely justifiable and understandable. And no, he didn't lie. Circumstances changed. Anyway, listen to this. This is unbelievable.
Did a lie
NBC
because
News said it.
Honestly,
NBC News.
What the other side has been saying for years, what you guys ran on for president was multiple lies. I mean, if Eric Holder said it right, I think he said if Hunter's name was Joe Smith, this case would probably have never even gone to trial, right? That it was always a political witch
hunt.
And
Lee,
it was always.
But wasn't, to Scott's point, I mean, wasn't it a lie? I mean, you can defend it, but wasn't it a lie that he was not going to pardon him?
No, I believe the circumstances have changed. I think that we have now have a president coming into office who's talking about firing squads, who's.
Yes, you just heard that correctly. Lee McGowan said we have a president coming into office who's talked about having firing squads. Therefore, it's okay to lie and say you're not going to pardon your son.
We have now have a president coming into office who's talking about firing squads, who's talking about running people around the country and making sure that everyone who's his enemy is going to be punished. And Hunter Biden lied about his drug use on a government form when he was buying a gun. And he failed to file and pay taxes when he was a drug addict. He paid back those taxes with interest. Donald Trump himself was indicted for 17 counts of criminal tax fraud, more than Hunter. And he's going to be the president of the United
11
States.
11 years.
So
you're missing a few things here. 11 years.
What you heard Scott Jennings there, the voice of sanity on CNN, where somebody can say that Donald Trump is talking about firing squads. That was Scott Jennings saying 11 years blanket pardon. That means anything that Hunter Biden did or may have done between 2014 and the end of 2024, so 11 years, is fully exonerated by the President of the United States. was Hunter Biden treated differently? Well, the answer is yes, because he was looking at multiple felony charges. Number one, for trying to get a firearm when he was in the throes of his crack addiction and lying on the form about it. And secondly, not paying his taxes. And so the initial attempt by the supposed federal U.S. attorney in Delaware, who's supposed to be prosecuting wrongdoing, was to blend the two into one plea bargain that would not result in any time behind bars for anything that he did that he was accused of. And when the Weiss, when the judge hearing this prosecution's plea bargain wouldn't buy it, wouldn't accept it, then it fell apart. So the system was already being rigged for Hunter Biden by a tame prosecutor. And so when that happened, they had to try him on what he actually did. And he was convicted and he was awaiting sentencing. Now, according to the U.S. Sentencing Commission, last year, 363 Americans were sent to prison for tax fraud. The average sentence was just under a year and a half in prison. The median loss in these cases was $359,000. That means half of the tax fraud was more than that, half the tax fraud was less than that. Hunter Biden engaged in a four-year scheme to not pay $1.4 million in taxes. So, yeah, when Joe Biden said it's clear that Hunter was treated differently, you bet he was. Now, Donald Trump's going after his political enemies. He's just waiting. He's got firing squads. He's talking about it. Do you remember in 2016 when he was running against Hillary, during one of their debates, Donald Trump said, when I am elected, I am going to appoint a federal official to look into your tax situation. And if you have been found to have broken the law, remember, she was under fire for national security grounds of having her own private server that she would communicate with when she was Secretary of State, and thus all sorts of official documents were not being logged on State Department computers. It wasn't in the state computer State Department system because she was having them sent to her. 40,000 emails. And he said, I'm going to have someone look into your situation. Well, he got elected and he dropped it. Hillary Clinton was far more exposed to legal wrongdoing than either Joe Biden, who they caught with classified documents going all the way back to his days as a senator in several different locations, or Donald Trump. And Donald Trump's reaction was to drop the matter. Donald Trump had actually talked about whether or not, you know, he should pardon Hunter Biden as kind of a way of bringing the country together. And instead, Biden for whatever reason. Maybe he didn't trust that Trump would do it. Maybe he wanted to prevent any further inquiry into legal investigation of Hunter Biden's money, since it led back to Joe. Whatever his motive was, he brazenly lied after saying that that would not happen. There's a great piece about this in the New York Times by a columnist who is no fan of Donald Trump. Brett Stevens writes, if Democrats want to understand one of the reasons the Republican Party is ascendant, they can look to Joe Biden's pardon on Sunday for his son, Hunter. In its rank mendacity, political hypocrisy, naked self-dealing, and wretched example, it typifies so much of what so many Americans have come to detest about what the MAGA world calls the swamp. Start with the mendacity. Last December, Karine Jean-Pierre, White House press secretary, insisted, I've been very clear, the president is not going to pardon his son. The president reiterated this point in early June, telling David Muir from ABC News that he would not pardon Hunter if his son was convicted, as he later was, of three felony charges. And Brett Stevens goes on to say, it was always a good bet that President Biden would break his word as soon as it was politically safe to do so, but he doubled down on dishonesty in his statement about the pardon, claiming Hunter's prosecution was the result of political pressure on the judicial process. Nonsense. The charges stem from Hunter's reckless lifestyle, abetted and financed by his willingness to trade shamelessly on the family name. A previous plea agreement between Hunter and federal prosecutors fell apart last year under scrutiny from a federal judge. By the way, the judge in that case has also roundly, stoutly criticized Joe Biden's claim that there was political pressure of any kind on the court. So that's just simply not so. And then, of course, you get to the hypocrisy. Every year, federal prosecutors file hundreds of cases against people who lie on the firearms transaction record, known as a Form 4473. Joe Biden actually wrote that in to the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act. So the same president who made both gun control and stricter tax enforcement part of his political message now sees his son's transgressions of those very laws basically a nuisance offense. And I love how he sums up here. After the news of the pardon broke, a liberal friend of mine wrote to say that perhaps it wasn't such a big deal, at least when considering Donald Trump's choices for attorney general and FBI director. But when a Democratic president behaves as Biden just did, it fuels the corrosive public cynicism that helped elect Donald Trump yet again, while licensing and excusing whatever plans the president-elect may have for politicizing justice and using it for the benefit of friends, family, and self. What a degrading finale for Biden's feeble, forgettable, frequently foolish presidency. I like the alliteration. Feeble, forgettable, frequently foolish presidency. And Donald Trump, by the way, does not want to politicize justice. He wants to get the politics out of the justice system. Like going after him for reasons that turned out to be baseless throughout his tenure as president. The Russia hoax, collusion hoax, the use of the legal system to try and ruin and wreck his life when he was out of office. Trump wants politics out of the justice system. So that's another difference between Biden and the Democrats and Trump and the Republicans. It is coming up here 19 and a half minutes after 7 o'clock. In about 15 minutes, we're going to have a little bit of Christmas cheer here. Our friends from the Salvation Army telling us about the Red Kettle program and about the toy drive, which happens later this week, and how you can be one of those Salvation Army bell ringers, you and your kids. Be kind of fun way to ring in, quite literally, ring in the holiday spirit. As the Commute with Carlson continues, Talk Radio 570 KVI, Philip J. Vandervoort, the third right around the corner of the...
John, Phil, did you ever hear 50th anniversary of this song would have been 2021, 2022? There was effort in search for any of the original kids, age 4 to 12, of the Harlem Community Choir that recorded with John on this song.
Oh, wow. Cool.
To try to make a new version of it for the 50th anniversary. I've never seen anything. I've never heard of anything. I keep getting asked every time this song starts appearing on radio at the holiday time, but... Can you imagine some of these kids now in their 50s going, I was there. I was one of those of that song.
It would be good to know what happened to the kids who were in the choir for that. Speaking of great songs, our legendary lyric contest continues. And again, we haven't played the song yet. We will sometime this hour. And this is your lyric. When you hear it going in or out of commercial break, be caller number 10. We're snuggled up together like two birds of a feather would be. We're snuggled up together like two birds of a feather would be. When you hear that song, be caller number 10. And we're sending you to Daniel's Broiler Steakhouse there with a $50 gift card. All right. Philip J. Vandervoort III, what is going on in the social media world?
Well, I think a lot of eyes waiting to and ears waiting to see and hear what happens with the New York City trial of Daniel Penny, put on trial for the manslaughter of Jordan Neely in that New York City subway car a little over a year ago, year and a half ago now, almost. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. I've been trying to pick through news stories and what's getting posted on social media to get more understanding of what was happening in the trial process in the court case. And Newsweek posted a story late yesterday as this was all going to the jury for deliberations. And as the jury continues to deliberate today, they have this two passages that I think are instructive. And it starts off, what was Jordan Neely doing on that subway? And it says, in the trial, jurors were shown two eyewitness videos that showed the chokehold at the center of the case, one of which was the six-minute video that was widely distributed and viewed and shared on newscasts and social media and so forth that brought a national spotlight to the case. There was also a never-before-seen footage captured by a high school student that was shown in court. Witnesses said Neely began moving erratically, throwing his jacket on the floor and yelling about being hungry and thirsty after boarding an Uptown F train in New York and Manhattan. They said he proclaimed that he didn't care if he lived or died or that he wanted to return to jail. That's when Penny and some others heard him say he was also ready to kill. So that's going to be one of the factors that this jury is going to have to decide on. And I hadn't seen that described quite that way until I came across this. And this description is in a Newsweek.com story. It also adds, several subway riders testified in court that they were terrified of Neely that day. One woman testified, said she was, quote, scared bleepless, end quote. We'll have to omit her curse word there, but she said it that way in court. But for the radio purposes, we'll have to censor that. She was scared by his ranting on the train, while another told the court, quote, I've taken the subway for 30 years and I've seen a lot. I've seen a lot of unstable people. This felt different to me, end quote. So those are a few more examples of what came out testimony-wise in court. Yesterday, as Mark and I were subbing for you, John, we were talking about a story out of Tacoma. And Tacoma's facing a budget shortfall, a $24 million budget shortfall. And one of the things that might get cut is a crew, I think they call it a rover crew, of firefighters. and it's able to go from station to station to kind of cover absences and people that are out sick when they need to cover shifts and things like that. And I was complaining that everyone in the city of Tacoma leadership needs to have some transparency. If we're going to start cutting firefighter positions first when a city is facing a budget deficit, we need to have some transparency about anything else that can be cut. And so I was pointing out to the listeners yesterday on the show, hey, what are some, you know, there's got to be some examples. I'm sure if we wanted to go through it with a fine-tooth comb, we would. And a KVI, a KVI listener sent over a story that King 5 had posted just 2 weeks ago, not even 2 weeks ago, back on November 20th. And it was the guaranteed income plan that they've, a pilot program that they've been running for Tacoma. And they're spending $1.9 million on that. So if the city is going to spend $1.9 million on a guaranteed income program pilot project, but say that they don't have enough money to staff enough firefighters, you need to be asking more questions about what the city leaders and the mayor of Tacoma are doing in Tacoma.
Gee, what are your priorities? Very good point. When we come back, a little holiday cheer coming your way as the Commute with Carlson continues. Talk Radio 570 KVI. And back we are. I knew they'd catch it. All right. It's 23 minutes to 8 o'clock. And I could just let this song roll on for on replay for a couple hours. I just
I'm still saying snow somewhere around Seattle, somewhere Christmas Eve, Christmas Day. I'm still feeling it, man.
Talk about feeling the Christmas spirit, the holiday spirit.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, it's interesting about that song. It doesn't actually mention the word Christmas.
No.
Yeah, it's
about a sleigh ride. It brings back my times on the Dravis Hill over in Magnolia and coming down the counterbalance on a sled, which obviously we wouldn't do nowadays, kids.
All right. It is 23 minutes to 8 o'clock. Speaking of the holiday spirit, speaking of Christmas time, nothing connotes Christmas in America more than the Red Kettle, the Salvation Army, with that Salvation Army band. Brass band playing. We are very deeply tied to Salvation Army here at 570 KVI. I'm on the local board here, have been for a long time, and I love my association with this organization because all they do is good. And one of the people helping to make that happen is Major Roy Wild, General Secretary of the Salvation Army. He joins me on the morning commute line. Major Wild, how are you, sir?
I am doing fantastic. Good morning. How are you today?
I am doing just great. Thanks for making the time, Roy. And we got a couple of things we want to talk about. We want to talk about the bell ringing campaign, the Red Kettle campaign. But we also want to talk about the toy drive, and the toy drive's coming up. Tell us more.
Yeah, so the Salvation Army, in partnership with Cairo, is doing a toy drive this Friday, and we're doing a telethon where people can call in and make donations to help us purchase toys. And then we also have partnered with Fred Meyer and Walmart. And if you go into any Walmart or Fred Meyer in the area, there is a toy box there. And you can do some shopping and drop off an unwrapped toy in that toy box on your way out of the, as you check out of the store.
All right. Again, does that sound familiar? Once again, Fred Meyer teaming up with the Salvation Army. You can walk into any Fred Meyer, buy a toy or a whole sleigh full of toys, and buy them. You can leave them there at the Fred Meyer location, and they'll make sure the Salvation Army toy truck gets all of them and hands them out to a deserving child.
That's exactly right. In fact, we'll be handing them out to over 20. We're hoping to collect around 20,000 toys this Christmas season, and we'll be distributing those toys to just over 5,000 children here in King County area alone.
That's very good. By the way, people always ask, how do you find which children are eligible? How do you find the children most in need?
So the children that will be serving our families at the Salvation Army in local areas here are already working with and are providing assistance for them throughout the year. And so those children then are the ones that we'll be providing toys for.
They're in the system, in other words.
Okay. Yeah, they are in the system. They're families that we're currently helping with for a variety of reasons.
Now, I should point out that this is not just happening in King County. It's not just happening in Seattle, King County. It's happening all over the Puget Sound area, correct, Roy?
It is, all over the Puget Sound area. In fact, Salvation Army is doing this across our northwest region, our northwest division, which is all the state of Washington, northern Idaho, and western Montana. So our reach is pretty large here in the area.
Beautiful. I love the fact that, again, this is going out and about into reaches of the countryside that might not come to mind. But
correct.
Which the Salvation Army knows about it, because wherever there's a need, the Salvation Armies are always there.
Exactly. In fact, I don't know if your listeners know this or you know this, is that Salvation Army has actually been serving here in this area since 1887. Salvation Army first came to Seattle. So about 141 years, Salvation Army has been serving the northwest area, northwest region.
Or to put it another way, the Salvation Army was here 2 years before Washington became a state.
And the gold rush.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So,
and we've been here that long, and we're not planning to go anywhere anytime soon.
All right. So that's the toy drive. And again, that is being sponsored by Cairo 7. And
correct.
So we want to encourage people. You can walk into any Fred Meyer location and buy a toy or more. You know, this is something that that mom used to do on a toy drive day. She would show up, and she did it until 2022.
Wow.
When she was 88. She did it until she was 88 years old. She would come to the Salvation Army, the one in Issaquah, on toy drive day, and she would walk into the Salvation Army, walk into the Fred Meyer, and she would wheel out. I remember the first time she did, I'm going to get some toys. And I said, Mom, that's a wonderful thing to do. And she comes out with a couple of bicycles and an absolutely packed grocery cart. I said, Mom, what did you do? What are you doing?
For me?
And she said, I shopped for you kids for years. I haven't had to shop for you for a long time, so I'm going to shop for someone else's kids. Hmm. So that's what she used to do annually. So it's
wow.
A wonderful way to get into the Christmas spirit. So go into any Fred Meyer location. You can also go online to Cairo7.com. That's K-I-R-O, known famously as the place where John Carlson once served as point-counterpoint commentator. Cairo7.com. One more time, Cairo7.com. You can make an online donation.
Correct.
And you can do that right now. Okay, so let's talk about the Red Kettle program.
All right.
How's that going this year, Roy?
Well, we are out and about. We have Red Kettles in front of most of the grocery stores and department stores in the area. And we are a little bit behind compared to this time last year, but we're hoping that will pick up as people are starting to get out and about more and are just aware of the Salvation Army kettle. And when they give a donation to that Red Kettle, the impact that it makes on people's and individuals' lives here in King County and beyond.
Well, I tell you, I don't like the fact that you say that you're a little behind. I think we need to improve on that. And well, the reason Roy Wild from the Salvation Army is joining us here, the major wants us to know that if you and your family, or you and your friends, or maybe you know friends from church or whatnot, if you would like to be a Salvation Army bell ringer for a couple of hours or for a couple of weeks, this is your chance. Tell people how they can do it, Roy.
Well, individuals can do that if they go to a website, and they go to registertoring.com. That's registertoring.com, and they click on there. They put in their zip code, and it'll bring up their local Salvation Army, and then it'll also bring up locations close to that area, and you simply just put your name in. It'll have a time slot for you, and you'll get a follow-up confirmation email, and it's that simple. It's a one-and-done, easy deal to do to help to volunteer some time to help spread some Christmas joy and then to help individuals in our community as well.
I think that's kind of cool. Think of it. You and your family, your entire – you could do it alone, or you and your family could just go to registertoring.com and fill in your zip code, and they will connect you to – a location that needs a Salvation Army bell ringer, and what are the time slots again, Major Wild?
So time slots are throughout the day. It's anywhere from about 9 o'clock to 6 o'clock in the evening. And when you go onto that website and you click on a location, it'll actually give you the time slots that are available. You just put in your name, and you're locked in and ready to go.
Wouldn't that be great if KVI listeners could fill the void here? How many bell ringers do you need, Roy?
Oh, my gosh. We need bell ringers. We need several hundreds and of volunteers to help us do this. I mean, this is something that we do now Monday through Sunday until the 24th of December. And the more volunteers we have, obviously the more money we're able to raise. And 85 cents of every dollar that is put into that bucket goes directly back to individuals that we serve in the local community. So the more people we have, the more help we're going to be able to provide across the area.
And what percent of your holiday fundraising comes from the Red Kettle program?
This is a major fundraising aspect for us. It's the one time a year where Salvation Army is visible, if you will, out in the open. And so the majority of our fundraising comes during the month of, November, especially December. And not only is it the time that we're out up front where people see us, but I just want people to know that that money that's given to help us, the need doesn't stop. It's 365 days a year. So it's not just at Christmas. It's not just toys that we do. But there's just so many things that the Salvation Army does to help individuals that are in need. And we can't do it without volunteers helping, and we can't do it without community being gracious and giving and supporting the Salvation Army through donations.
So anyone, maybe you don't have money, but maybe you have some time. And what a great way to get into the holiday spirit to, head out to, a store near maybe the one you shop at. And you're ringing the bell with the Red Kettle for the Salvation Army. You know it's going to be a great cause. And maybe you're doing it with a friend. You don't have to do it all day when you sign up, right?
No, not at all. You can do it for a two-hour shift, and you can have you show up for an hour, a friend show up for an hour. You can have your whole family show up for a couple hours. You can go longer if you want to do that. But we are looking and hoping people do at least 2 hours to do a shift. But, you can go as long as you want. And I can attest, I've done it for – I've grown up in the Salvation Army. I'm a fifth-generation Salvationist. And I remember as a little kid going out with my dad and my brothers. They're playing their horns, and I didn't have the musical talent in the family, so I was the bell ringer. I was actually the one that would ring the bell, but doing it for a long majority of my life, I could tell you firsthand, it is a great experience to be able to know not only that you are giving back to the community, but the people that you get to connect with and talk with as well is just incredible, and it's a great opportunity to share some Christmas hope with people.
And a great way to get into the Christmas spirit yourself. There's nothing better. You're donating your time, and they're donating their money in the Red Kettle. You make eye contact. Hey, thanks a lot. Merry Christmas. That's what the Salvation Army is all about. Again, 85 cents of every dollar goes directly into assistance. That's very low overhead organization, the organization that is very near and dear to my heart, the Salvation Army. Again, if you would like to be a bell ringer for a couple hours or a couple of weeks, just go online now, registertoring.com. That's registertoring.com. And you're welcome to join me again next week. And we'll keep the word up so we can fill all these opportunities to keep those Red Kettles busy, Roy.
Fantastic. We appreciate it, man. Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Major Roy Wild, Salvation Army, thanks ever so much for joining us. We've got a winner in our legendary lyric contest. Wait until you hear more about the history of this song coming right up on The Commute with Carlson. Back we are, The Commute with Carlson. Congratulations. Our legendary lyrics winner is Ricardo in Kent. KVI listener Ricardo correctly guessed that it's Sleigh Ride. This was the Ronettes song. Version. That's Ronnie Spector.
A lot of fun to listen to.
The Ronettes. 1963, the Wall of Sound, a song. It doesn't mention Christmas, but boy, does this ever get you in the Christmas spirit, the Ronettes song. Anyway, it was originally recorded back in the 40s during a heat wave, July 1946. And its first performance was by the Boston Pops with Arthur Fiedler on May 4th, 1948. Eventually was recorded by Leroy Anderson in 1950, and then by the Ronettes. It hit the charts all the time on the holiday charts. It hit its highest mark in 2023. It hit number 8.
Was there a reason it made such a big comeback then?
It's just...
the spirit of the season?
Yeah, one of those songs that just keeps coming. And then Gwen Stefani had her version... and Amy Grant has her version of the song.
That's a gem with Amy Grant.
I love the Amy Grant version as well, but this is untoppable. The Ronettes version of Sleigh Ride. Hour number 3 of The Commute with Carlson. And welcome to hour number 4, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI.
It does feel like
did you just
hour
say
number
hour 4? Number 4?
We're working overtime here.
5, 6, 7.
Oh, right. Rewind.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I
was including the rewind, but yes, our third live hour.
Just like, wow.
And you got an hour of highlights.
Been here that long, huh?
Phil and Mark. Anyway, yes.
Or is it because it's 8:04 in the morning right now?
8:04 in the morning.
Something like that. Some combination of those things.
Our lines are open for you here at... 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. Here's an interesting story out of New York here. The mayor, Eric Adams, who has previously announced that New York was a sanctuary for illegal immigrants, people in the country illegally, now says that he would like to meet with the new border czar, Tom Homan, and, quote, would love to sit down with the border czar, hear his thoughts on how we're going to address those in the country illegally who are harming our citizens. Find out what his plans are, where our common grounds are. We can work together. Close quote. How about that? The mayor of New York wants to work together with the Trump administration's point man on illegal immigration and the guy who will head the deportation effort, Tom Homan. The mayor of New York goes on to say, there are those who are here, meaning those who are in the country illegally already, those who are here committing crimes, robberies, shooting at police officers, raping innocent people have been a harm to our country. Those are the people I'm talking about. I made it clear that I'm not going to be warring with this administration. I'm going to be working with this administration. He went on to say that he believes that his own legal problems were brought on because of his criticisms of Joe Biden's overly permissive immigration policy. We don't need to get into all that. That will be worked out in the future. But he said that the left wing of his party, progressives, have grown afraid to speak out against illegal immigration because of cancel culture. He said, quote, "Well, cancel me, because I'm going to protect the people of this city. And if you come into this country, in this city, and think you're going to harm innocent New Yorkers and innocent migrants and asylum seekers, this is not the mayor you want to be in the city under." He said, "I'm an American. Americans have certain rights. The Constitution is for Americans. I'm not a person that snuck into this country. My ancestors have been here for a long, long time." Okay, so notice we're beginning to see a change in tone from some of the people who heretofore have winked at illegal immigration or even welcomed it. If you want to see the opposite of Eric Adams, someone who proudly puts a premium on keeping illegal aliens here, even if they're committing crime, well, then you want to talk to Dow Constantine, King County executive. The same Dow Constantine whose response to an unprecedented wave of violent juvenile crime was to suggest, let's close the Juvenile Justice Center. 5 years ago, we talked about this at length, 5 years ago, issued an executive order that prohibited immigration authorities from using county-owned Boeing Field, from flying those who have been ordered out of the country by an immigration judge, people who received due process and were booted out of the country. He said, you cannot fly them out of Boeing Field. You will have to bus them somewhere else. And they've been busing them. For some reason, they aren't using SeaTac or McCord Air Force Base. They have to go take them to Yakima and fly them out of Yakima. They had been using Boeing Field about once a week until 2019. And then comes this executive order. Brian Moran, when he was the U.S. attorney, challenged the legality of these of this executive order because, again, this was Dow Constantine trying to keep illegals in the country that were ordered out by an immigration judge. Just unfreaking believable. These are people who had committed violent crimes, some of them, had committed violent crimes while here, and Dow's still trying to keep them here. A lower court ruled that the county has no right to boot immigration authorities from using, by the way, a airfield that was built on federal land donated to the county for the purpose of building the airport. It was all about trying to harass immigration authorities who are playing by the rules. This is no longer, we're not going to cooperate with the federal government. That's federal. Immigration law is federal. We're not going to allow cooperation from local government for something that's federal. Now it's, we're going to actively try and prevent you from enforcing federal law by not allowing you to even use a county-owned airport. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals weighed in last week and just slammed that. This is the Ninth Circuit, the liberal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and just slammed Dow Constantine and his executive order. The flights, which have already started up again, cannot be banned. So this is really, really good news. And it is an absolute butt-kicking for Dow Constantine. Again, he will be leaving office as the guy who tried to close the King County jail for adults when we had an unprecedented increase in adult crime, violent and property crime, and tried to close the juvenile jail, which was built, cost $250 million, and has only been open for a few years. And he was trying to close that. So, again, this is Dow Constantine going full Shama Sawant, full Pramila Jayapal. And he looks like an idiot. What's your response to violent juvenile crime? Oh, let's close the juvenile jail. So even Danny Westneat has weighed in with a column this morning in the Seattle Times. He writes, 5 years ago, I ended one of my scribblings, one of his columns in the space with this line, politically, it's so extreme, it seems bound to backfire. Says you're probably thinking that could be referring to practically anything. And it's true around here. But this one just got settled. The courts have ruled that King County's first-in-the-nation crusade to block federal deportation flights is kaput. The county has successfully booted the ICE Air flights back in 2019. They've been back since last year, and now they will be allowed to continue indefinitely. So it doesn't matter who the county executive is. The ban on allowing immigration authorities to use King County Airport, Boeing Field, was because the flights were deemed to be inconsistent with the values of King County. He said, but sanctuary, as it was first laid out, writes Danny Westney, was that local governments would adopt a don't ask, don't tell around undocumented immigrants. The goal was to keep them from being pushed into the shadows. It was never supposed to be, we will actively block the feds from deporting anyone for any reason, even immigrants with felony criminal convictions. But that's what they were doing. According to Immigration Customs Enforcement records, and I'm glad that Danny laid all this out, in the first 6 months of 2024, 945 people were deported. Of those 945, about 30%, that's 261, already had criminal convictions on their records when they were caught for assault, robbery, domestic violence, drunk driving, gun, and drug trafficking. These include, for example, a man convicted of cocaine smuggling, picked up in Tacoma, sent back to Costa Rica. A Russian national sent back for, quote, child exploitation. He's a child trafficker. A 24-year-old convicted of possessing explicit child sexual abuse material. A pedo. A pedophile. Sent back to Mexico. A Nicaraguan wanted for murder. A Jordanian with suspected ties to terrorism. Think about that. These are the people that Dow Constantine wanted to remain in this country. So much so that he tried to block federal immigration authorities from flying them out of the United States. You talk about people who are on the other side, actively trying to keep criminal, violent criminal, child sex offenders, trying to keep them in this country after an immigration judge ordered them out. There's Dow Constantine. That should be the end of his career. Danny Westney goes on to say, I don't sense that sanctuary for those five guys that he just mentioned was what people had in mind when they said they wanted to be welcoming to immigrants. There is already a bill, Senate Bill 5002, introduced for the next session of the legislature, Phil Fortunato, the main sponsor, to ban all local sanctuary policies. So, you know, Westneat says, I promise I'll eventually get off this series of about how Seattle's most progressive experiments keep backfiring, but the hits keep coming. The political cost is real. Yeah, he's right. And that is where it's time for you Democrats out there to do some serious thinking. I mean, some real hard, serious, honest thinking. Have you figured out yet how much you progressives, the far left, has helped bring about a second term of Donald Trump? That of all 10 members of Washington's House delegation in Congress, the person who did more to re-elect Donald Trump was probably Pramila Jayapal? Because people didn't just reject Kamala Harris. And people weren't about to just reject Joe Biden. People rejected what the Democratic Party has become. It has become a party that tried to prevent the federal government from flying illegal aliens guilty of child sex trafficking from being deported. Tried to keep them from being flown out of the country. That's just one example of how people were fed up with the whole border policy in every iteration that the Democrats had going. It is the extremism of the left on everything, everything. The wokeism, the trans policies, the refusal to crack down on crime and, in fact, seem more intent on cracking down on cops than cracking down on criminals. People just said, done with you people. Well, you know, in a way, I've got to say thank you to Dow Constantine. Thank you, Pramila Jayapal. Thank you, Jay Inslee. Your extremism has helped make Donald Trump president, and you have been his accidental ally. You have been doing more to help him than you realize. That is, again, the one token of you know, while the Democrats continue to run King County, that Republicans can take away is that their extremism is why they'll continue run King County. But Donald Trump will now be running the country. It's 21 minutes after 8. Philip J. Vandenberg III, right around the corner, his favorite segment of the day, social media sweep segment of the day, social media from socialists on The Commute with Carlson. Martina McBride on The John Carlson Show. All right. Getting people in the Christmas spirit this fourth day of December. Philip J., what do you got going social media from socialists?
Before we get to the socialists, I do have an update on the court jury deliberations in New York City on the Daniel Penny trial. Looking at a post from one of the New York Post reporters.
Yes.
Seems to be covering the case. And the update is that the jury in the Daniel Penny trial has just requested from the judge what they're calling the Vasquez video. I'm not sure which video that was. I had indicated earlier there was a high school student that recorded some video that had not been seen before the court proceeding, so it might be that. But they've requested this video compilation of body cams and then Daniel Penny's police station interrogation video. So that is what they seem to be focusing on, at least right now. So there's an update from the New York City jury deliberations in the Daniel Penny case. Now, on to the socialists on the social media and the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. The Urbanist is the Seattle-based pro-mass transit, anti-single-family home, progressive news and politics website. And they have a feature story on King County Council member Claudia Balducci, who has thrown her hat into the ring to run for King County Executive to replace Dow Constantine. And their story... promotion on social media says, new story, Claudia Balducci wants to tackle King County's challenges head on as executive. So the problems that she helped create as one of the King County Council members, she wants to tackle those challenges head on as an executive.
Why don't you invite Claudia on to join us here sometime next week or
sure,
so?
Sure, right?
You know?
Yeah.
We'll have her in for a conversation now, about what she wants to do as King County executive.
She's auditor or who's assessor? John Arthur
King
Wilson?
County,
the assessor. There we go.
King County tax assessor John
Arthur
Wilson is running.
He seems like he might have some potential given the circumstances of who else is running.
I still think the best candidate would be one of those South King County mayors who's had to really cope with the failures of county policy, like the mayor of Auburn, Nancy Backus, the mayor of Kent, Dana Ralph, the mayor of Federal Way, Jim Farrell. I mean, there's several. Mayor of Renton. Have one of them run and have all the other mayors get behind his or her candidacy. Yeah. And have the East Side have their own candidate for mayor. There are far more people on the East Side than there are in King County, or than there are in Seattle when it comes to King County executive.
Boy, I think that would be a far more productive strategy for the direction of King County. One other short one here. We've got Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was humble bragging on X that she had just hit 1 million followers on Blue Sky. And Blue Sky is this new Jack Dorsey social media website that's is basically going to be left-wing Twitter.
Yeah.
And so she came over to X to announce that she hit 1 million followers on Blue Sky, and people were pointing out, yes, you announced that on X because X is the social media site that actually still matters. And another person said, you can't get enough of X. That's why you love it here, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Humble brag there.
I want people to know that people are coming to my social media site, Blue Sky, so I better advertise it on X.
On X,
beautiful. It is coming up here on 8:30, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. We have some great comments on the KVI line. Also, the new director of the FBI, if Donald Trump has his way, will be Kash Patel. What people need to know about the FBI going into these confirmation hearings. Again, should be interesting as The Commute with Carlson. You know, I hear this song and I'm thinking it's a Monty Python skit.
That's what everybody thought. The Corey Band. Christmas song. We played every year. Stop the Calvary is the name of the song if you're trying to find it.
But it's an actual song. It's a good one, too. You know. Okay, we got a lot of different stuff coming your way, local and national. including local stories with a national angle. We were just talking about how Dow Constantine got curb stomped by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, reversing his ridiculous policy trying to prevent the federal government from flying illegal aliens who had been ordered out of the country by immigration judge. In other words, they received due process, but many of them, since they had criminal convictions in this country for violent crimes, including child sex trafficking and assault, Dow Constantine was trying to keep them in the country and prevent the federal government from deporting them out. So we talked about how the federal government humiliated Dow Constantine and ended that policy in case any other jurisdiction was thinking of following suit. That will not happen now. We have the federal government, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, announcing that their office in Seattle has removed 41-year-old Mohammed Abdellatif. Mohammed Hassan Abdellatif, age 41, has been removed because of his ties to terrorism. They're sending him back to Jordan. He was arrested by the Border Patrol near the town of Linden, which is a charming little town right up by the Canadian border. He entered the U.S. without being admitted. You might remember we did a story on how a parking lot up there by the Peace Arch had been a popular smuggling route where people would just drive in an illegal from Canada, and they'd walk across the parking lot into the country. Anyway, he was a known or suspected Jordanian terrorist. The Seattle office of Immigration and Customs Enforcement assumed custody immediately after immigration proceedings, and he was removed to Jordan. This is one of the people, by the way, that Dow Constantine would have kept in this country and prevented the federal government from flying him back to Jordan. Again, this is a press release from ICE. ERO Seattle is committed to the removal of non-citizens who pose a risk to the national security of the United States. Our officers perform those removals dutifully as part of federal law enforcement effort to protect Pacific Northwest communities. Non-citizens placed into removal proceedings receive legal due process from federal immigration judges. The Executive Office for Immigration Review is an agency of the Department of Justice. The ERO office, again, the Executive Review Office, is the principal law enforcement authority in charge of domestic immigration law enforcement. Okay. That is good news. Okay, we've got a lot of other news that is happening as well. The CEO of one of the largest healthcare insurers in the country, Brian Thompson, was shot and killed on the streets of New York City, just outside the Manhattan Hotel where United Healthcare was holding an investor conference. Mr. Thompson was 50 years old. He'd headed the company for the last 4 years. He'd been with the company for 20 years.
And this all just happened this morning, just an hour or two ago.
And when we first talked about it, they said they didn't know whether this was a random attack or a targeted attack. The shooter was dressed all in black, walked up and fired point blank several times at the 50-year-old CEO. Brian Thompson. And they've got video, quote, "This was not just what appears to be an act of random violence. It seems to be a clearly targeted, by an individual. We will apprehend that individual," said the mayor, Eric Adams of New York City, used to be a police captain. So, man, right in the middle of the holiday season in one of the busiest parts of New York City. Incredible that went down. So that's the latest we have. This is not a random attack, and it was not a robbery. This was just an out-and-out hit on someone. KVI text line, some interesting messages. We have KVI listener Jim, who listens to us from Sturgis, South Dakota on KVI.com. You can, too. Excellent reception at KVI.com. Said, "Hey, guys, didn't one of Hunter Biden's billionaire friends from California pay off his taxes for him?" I had heard that, but I don't know that it's been confirmed. I do know that he was painting. He prepared a series of paintings that were being sold for unbelievable amounts of money, up to $500,000 by people who were
essentially a GoFundMe sort of a thing, help bail out Hunter sort of a thing.
But he was selling artwork. It was just nuts. That they were paying that much money. Obviously, they're trying to curry favor with his father. TJ in Renton has the idea of the day. When Donald Trump takes office, he should pardon Joe Biden for anything he did or may have done.
Yeah, there's the technical wording,
Let's
right?
bring the country together just to troll him. Just to troll him. Oh, that's good. We talked about the case with Daniel Penny on the subway, who held a fanatic going crazy on a New York subway and threatening and frightening subway patrons, put him in what was called a chokehold. We have another listener who says it wasn't really a chokehold, and he explains why in a moment. But Christine said, "I was in New York 5 years ago. I took the subway a couple of times. One time a crazy person threatened to stab me for 5 minutes straight. He finally got off the subway, much to my relief. He was saying, 'I can't wait to feel my knife taking your life away.' It was a traumatizing experience, and there was no Daniel Penny there to help."
Five years ago? Is that what she said the time frame was? Bill de Blasio time as the mayor of New York then?
Yes, Bill de Blasio time. That guy did terrible damage to the city. And then Mike in Sammamish points out, he says, "The hold that Daniel Penny used was not a chokehold. It was," the correct term, the technical term is lateral vascular neck restraint, more popularly known as a sleeper hold. "The hold cuts off the flow of blood to the brain at the carotid artery." He said a chokehold doesn't block off blood flow. It cuts the airway. It cuts off oxygen. "The sleeper hold does not cut off oxygen." He says, "I know this because I've been trained as an officer in the sleeper hold." Have you ever been in a sleeper hold?
No, but I've seen different demonstrations of this on video, not in person, but in video.
They've showed it on Yellowstone with Case, what
right.
he did
they
in
did
Afghanistan.
They did just have that in an episode here a couple weeks
ago. That's right. And, of course, we all learned it during professional wrestling from years past. But I actually have been placed in a sleeper hold. A friend of mine from law enforcement was doing what Mike in Sammamish, a KVI listener Mike, was doing here. He was explaining the difference between a choke hold and a sleeper hold. And I said, does it do any kind of permanent damage? Because it blocks the flow of
blood, right?
Blood.
Yeah, it would depend on how long it's held.
And to your brain. So do you suffer brain damage? He says, no, not if you do it right. And he said, here, I will show you. And I let him do it. And it's weird.
Did you just blink out?
It's weird. He puts the hold on you, and you don't feel pain, but you feel this bizarre sensation where all of a sudden your mind is just going dark. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you just start losing consciousness.
Yeah, I had.
And then he lets it go, and then the blood flows back. You
kind of come back to normality.
You come back to consciousness
afterwards.
Huh?
A headache or anything afterward with that flow?
No, I mean it takes like 5 or 10 minutes to regain full control of your faculty, your senses. But for that while when you're sleeper hold, I mean, you really are on your way out. You're losing consciousness. I don't mean out of life, out of consciousness. So that what Mike is pointing out is that's what he was actually doing, the sleeper hold. And there's nothing wrong at all with the sleeper hold. And the media, which would include me, the media is getting it wrong when they say it was a choke hold, where he was simply choking.
Okay, real quick. I just tuned into the station, and you're saying this is about the New York situation here?
The New York case of Daniel Penny.
And you're saying?
Former Marine on the subway when this guy began who has a long criminal record, mental health problems, was going nuts and began
threatening people.
Throwing things around and threatening to kill people. And that's when he jumped in and restrained him. And much to, he was thanked by people on the subway, and he thought that he was unconscious. And it turned out he died. It's not clear if he died from the chokehold or from the sleeper hold.
There you go. Good correction.
There is no, that has not been confirmed.
And that's what the jury's going to have to decide, right?
Well, he had like a medical issue, too, and then they thought there was like...
A medical issue. He was under the influence of K2, several kinds of drugs.
Marijuana.
Cell, I mean, anemia, I can never say that word.
But, I mean, someone is going to face time behind bars for stepping forward to defend and safeguard fellow passengers on a subway? People he didn't even know he was trying to protect? I don't think so. Again, this is what is wrong with blue states, with blue cities in blue states. This is the kind of miscarriage of justice that should never happen. All right, you got 10 minutes to 9 o'clock, the Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right, well, wanted to get to some phone calls. Unfortunately, breaking news out of Seattle here with Jeff Pogula from Northwest News.
Yes, Councilmember Tammy Morales, the lone socialist on the council after the more moderate members were swept into office last year, has announced she is resigning from the Seattle City Council effective January 6th. This came out in a press release just a few moments ago. And in that press release, she has a litany of complaints alleging that the rest of the council did everything from intimidating voters, suppressing the will of voters, and even arresting people during public comment. So it's quite the litany of complaints. We've reached out to Tammy Morales. We hope to have her on the Northwest Politicast this weekend. But certainly with the lone socialist on the council now stepping down, it's another more moderate shift for Seattle City Hall.
Now, you cover and you follow city politics. Mm-hmm. Again, Shama Sawant used to rule that place.
Yep.
And she, like Tammy Morales, a fellow socialist, but they were down to one.
Yeah.
Tammy Morales was the lone socialist standing. Did she have much influence?
Not so much anymore. A number of her proposals were rejected by the new council because, remember, I think it was, what, total of five, maybe six new council members came in in the last election back in 2023. Mm-hmm. So many of the items she was pushing for were rejected by the more moderate members of the council that now had a majority. So if you read between the lines of the press release, you could tell she's frustrated in the fact that she's not being able to get things done in her view. So she's stepping aside here on January the 6th.
Interesting. And we'll talk in the future about who could take her place. I don't know if it'd be Tammy Wu again. Tammy Wu just lost a race. Yep. So we'll see. Thank you very much, Jeff Pogula.
Anytime.
Tammy Morales, the lone socialist standing out at the Seattle City Council. That's some good news. Get out there and enjoy this day.